On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers' Task Force on Student Debt. Remember that? It issued its final report over a year ago. And from that report, about 710,000 Wisconsinites owe more than $24 billion in federal student loans. And as students and families prepare to submit federal financial aid applications for the next school year, we are checking in with the State Department of Financial Institutions about the college debt burden. How do you want state lawmakers to address college affordability? Will you fill out a FAFSA, that complex federal form to qualify for financial aid? It's 800-642-1234. Cheryl Rapp is a college affordability specialist at the Department of Financial Institutions. Cheryl, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Good morning. So Friday marks when college students can start applying for federal financial aid for the next school year by completing their FAFSA, the free application for federal student aid. Wisconsin is trying to improve application rates. How big is this challenge?
It's a tough challenge right now, especially due to the pandemic that's still ongoing, where students just aren't feeling the need to fill out the FAFSA, and it actually is really important to fill it out, regardless if they think that they're going to receive anything or if they don't know if they're going to go on to post-secondary education next year. Filling out the FAFSA is number one in learning to see if you're able and you qualify for some federal student loans, but it also helps with a possibility of being able to get grants or some scholarships or a work-study program for school to help pay for it.
Why aren't students feeling the urgency?
Because a lot of students aren't actually sure what they want to do and what their next steps are going to be. And a lot of that has to actually do with the pandemic and everything being kind of turned upside down. They aren't sure what kind of education they want to continue with. Is it going to be a four-year college? Is it going to be a two-year college? Possibly a technical college or apprenticeship? And so there's a lot of students right now that are taking a gap year versus actually continuing on with post-secondary education. So they aren't thinking the need to fill out the FAFSA is important, but actually it is, because the sooner you fill out the FAFSA, the better chance of getting some type of money for post-secondary education. Even if you take the first semester off of school, if you hadn't filled out your FAFSA at the beginning of the year, it's going to be a lot harder to try and get some federal funding or student loans along those lines.
Cheryl, you know, last year Congress approved changes to the FAFSA, which is notoriously complex for families to fill out. And there's this huge push, even at the federal level, to simplify it. What is the status of these changes coming down from the federal government to states?
Sure. A lot of the changes actually that were announced have been pushed off to the 2023-2024 year. So there's a whole nother year to start implementing the simplification of FAFSA. So there are some minor slight changes where you still have to check the box for services and stuff like that, but it doesn't actually count towards your FAFSA application. There's a few minor changes about grandparents and your EdVest account as well that are going to be implemented.
Your 529, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Your college savings program 529, but none of that actually takes effect for this year's FAFSA. Most of it's been pushed off for the next year, the 2023-2024 FAFSA filing year.
So it's still as long as ever.
It is. They, unfortunately, yes. But I do know that they're consolidating some of the questions and making it more streamlined. So hopefully next year it's going to be a lot easier to fill out.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about college affordability with Cheryl Rapp, a specialist on that issue at the State Department of Financial Institutions. You can join in. How do you want lawmakers to address college affordability in Wisconsin? What policy issues should be taken up around higher ed colleges? What changes would you like to see? Join in at 800-642-1234. Cheryl, you're part of a FAFSA completion task force. What efforts are underway to improve completion rates?
Yep, the FAFSA Completion Task Force was created by the Wisconsin Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators, known as WASFA. And I'm actually co-chair as well as our Wisconsin Higher Educational AIDS Board Executive Secretary, Connie Hutchinson. And so we have members kind of through the Wisconsin School Counselors Association, Technical College, Community College, UW Systems. And we all have one goal in mind, and that's to kind of to help address the low FAFSA completion rate. And one of our goals is kind of to offer assistance to families with FAFSA completion and ensure that they have all the information they need in order to complete the FAFSA, but also understand what happens after you complete it. We also kind of developed an opportunity and toolkit for high school counselors and school access personnel by creating a one-page kind of takeaway that they can have and talk to their students about the importance of filling out the FAFSA, as well as resources when they have questions on where to go, don't know what to do, and kind of reaching out the federal student aid office and let them know that there's an 800 number, and then there's the website 24/7 chat box people can get answers to about that.
Sounds like families shouldn't go it alone, that they should get help along the way in completing this form.
For the most part, families can do it alone as long as they know and they're prepared and they have their information ahead of time. The student has their federal student aid ID that they've applied for. The parents have kind of their tax information and stuff. And as long as you have that with you as you're filling it out, totally perfect and good, and you can get it filled out together. So it's nice to actually fill it out, student and parent, at the same time. But there's also it's also recommended, if you have questions, to go to your school counselor or to call the financial aid office at any college, and they'll help you through it. We actually, through College Goal Wisconsin, are offering some college financial aid nights and FAFSA nights this year as well. In October and November, there's going to be a total of 6 virtual events. So October 6th, October 13th, October 20th, 27th, November 3rd and November 10th are virtual events, all starting at 6 p.m. That will help parents and students walk through and actually fill out the FAFSA. There are also going to be this year in-person events throughout the whole state, starting October 4th. October 4th is our very first event at some places, and dates and locations for all that can actually be found on the College Goal Wisconsin website, which is collegegoalwi.org. And on that can be a whole list of, I believe there's 36 or 42 in-person sites.
And we have a link to that as well at wpr.org/mornings. I want to turn to 529s here. There has been a huge push for families to open these accounts, and it's, you know, kind of said that this is the way to save for college. What are the trends that you see in 529 accounts in Wisconsin?
Actually, 529 accounts are really good for us in Wisconsin. They're kind of like a 401k, so it's like a retirement, but the college savings plan is a vehicle designed to save specifically for higher education. And the accounts allow for state tax deduction in Wisconsin up to $3,380 per year per account for married individuals, or $1,640 for those filing individually. They also allow for tax-deferred growth on earnings on any federal tax-free qualified higher education expenses. So like tuition, room, board, books, and supplies. So a recent tax change actually expanded the use of the 529 to include K-12 tuitions, apprenticeships, and a one-time use to pay up to $10,000 towards student loan debt.
There is, you know, each state has its own rules around 529s. And in Wisconsin, there isn't tax parity that allows you to receive a state tax benefit, as you mentioned, you know, on contributions to any 529 plan in the country. So my 529 accounts that I contribute to in Louisiana do nothing to help on my taxes in Wisconsin. Minnesota, 6 other states have tax parity. Is there any movement to change this policy in Wisconsin?
I actually don't know the answer to that one for sure, but I do know that for Wisconsin, it's great to have a 529 because of the tax implications that you can get and tax-free information.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Cheryl Rapp, a college affordability specialist at the State Department of Financial Institutions. Are you a Wisconsin graduate with student loan debt? Tell us about your experience. What advice would you offer families as they plan for college bills? Join in 800-642-1234. There's more State Cap in a moment with Cheryl Rapp on the Ideas Network. We're discussing college debt and what is being done about it in the Evers administration on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the UW's Student Success Through Applied Research Lab, small debts are a public policy problem. The median size of a defaulted student loan in our state is just about $9,000. And the researchers say that students who leave college with debt but no degree tend to have the hardest time repaying even relatively small student loans. Are you in this situation? No degree, yet struggling with loans. What policy change would help alleviate the debt burden? Join in 800-642-1234. Cheryl Rapp is a college affordability specialist at the State Department of Financial Institutions and stays with us. Cheryl, let's look at the debt burden. How is the pandemic affecting the amount of student debt that you're seeing Wisconsin families take on?
So the number has been going up. Due to changes in family situations and stuff like that, where there have been families that have lost their jobs, families that have changed jobs. And so there are more students that are actually pulling out student loans and taking more federal student loans that are available than they have in the past, just in order to have them continue going on to post-secondary education and finish their college degree wherever it is that they are.
And so do you see that just rising steadily in the pandemic? Was that going up before? How does that trend compare to pre-pandemic?
The trend actually has gone up mainly due to the pandemic right now. The trend before that actually was starting to improve and go down a little bit with the education that's out there and informing people about, here's what's being offered to you for your federal student loan, and here's why you don't need to take the full amount that's always being offered to you. Just kind of take what you need for that current year, for that current semester of education. Because next year, you have to apply for the FAFSA again, because it's a yearly thing, and you'll be offered some more money as well. And so it's always good to pretty much compound interest to take what's just needed and not to take beyond that. And that actually has been helping to reduce the amount of student loan debt that's out there.
What factors should families consider when deciding how much to take out with student loans? Because sometimes students don't even realize that they have a loan years down the line. Their credit suddenly takes a hit, and they discover that there's a loan they didn't even realize they had from their schooling.
Yep, and that's the recommendation, is read everything before you sign it, because usually students, when they're applying to college and they're agreeing and signing their applications for the college and their acceptance for that college, they actually haven't read it and paid attention to say that they're actually signing to take out this federal loan that's part of the tuition package that they had agreed to. And so it's more paying attention and making sure what you're signing is your acceptance, but also knowing that you're accepting a possible federal loan that's part of that tuition package that's been offered.
Yeah, so making sure you definitely read the fine print and pay attention to the number of loans and then how you pay them back. Because here in the pandemic, too, there's been some reprieve on paying back those student loans. What is the status now?
Yep, the reprieve actually is going to be lifted as of January 31st this year. So pretty much February 1st of 2022. Be expected to start paying back your student loans. Repayment plans are going to come into effect again. Not everyone's going to have to pay it on February 1st. Some of them, depending on your dates, are going to be in the middle of the month. But the reprieve actually goes away the end of January of 2022. There is help, though. We did create, during the pandemic, a Wisconsin Student Loan Help Hotline, which is for all Wisconsin student loan borrowers. And that number is 833-589-0750. And it's to help borrowers actually just answer questions or ask questions and figure out what's the best repayment plan and how can I be prepared for repaying my student loans.
What kind of questions can the hotline answer, and what have you fielded?
So the hotline is actually in a partnership that's run through Ascendium Education Solutions. So it's the servicers there can actually help answer whatever questions. And it can be anything related to when do I actually need to start paying back my student loan, which everybody is now being informed and told that as of February 1st, the repayments are going to start taking place again. They can help the student walk through the best repayment plan for them, be it an income-based repayment plan or something else along those lines. Most of students are probably in the standard repayment plan, and so they can walk them through maybe adjusting what type of a federal loan that they have and how the best repayment plan will be suited for them.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about college affordability with Cheryl Rapp, who is a specialist on that issue at the State Department of Financial Institutions. You can join in. Are you a Wisconsin grad with student loan debt, carrying debt? Tell us about your experience, especially in the pandemic. What advice can you offer families as they plan for college bills? Join in at 800-642-1234. Cheryl, some schools went virtual, of course, last school year. What happened in that situation with dual enrollment programs that aim to reduce college costs by helping students earn free college credits?
So some of, depending on the school district and area you were at, some of the dual enrollment was kind of put on hold due to the hybrid or just the strictly online option for students, because it's a lot harder for teachers to teach the regular class plus the dual enrollment class, because there's certificates and certain teachers are able and qualified to do the dual enrollment. So some of that was put on hold depending on what district and what area in the state of Wisconsin you were in. Some of it actually thrived because students were able to do the online that was focused on dual enrollment for them or AP classes in order to get credit for their post-secondary education to help them already gain credits and gain information when they attend their freshman year of college.
Is there any sense when dual enrollment programs will be back on track and being offered around Wisconsin?
It currently is for this school year.
Okay.
They should be back on track. Students should be able to, classes have started already, be part of the dual enrollment for continuing on with high school plus earning credit for their post-secondary education.
In the state budget approved this summer, lawmakers ended their freeze on the UW system tuition so the Board of Regents could decide to raise rates in the future. How much does raising tuition by even modest amounts, how does that affect access to higher education?
I don't think it affects access to higher education as much as people would think, because normally they just see, okay, cost of everything's going up, but in reality, the cost of everything in general is going up, inflation and stuff like that. So the increase in tuition isn't a big burden or a huge burden to the students, because it kind of goes hand in hand with when they get their offer letter and they can figure out, here's the amount of money that's being offered through federal loans. Here's maybe the scholarships and grants that they've applied for. That kind of gap between the two isn't as big. Nothing really has changed.
I want to circle back to FAFSAs. I understand Governor Evers is planning to issue a proclamation calling October the state's FAFSA filing month. How else could state leaders play a role in improving completion rates?
Well, they can try and help out just explaining and marketing and continue to talk about FAFSA and why completing the FAFSA is actually important, because everyone who files a FAFSA is eligible for something. So if, filling it out is the only way a college can access all forms of federal aid, from Pell Grants to direct federal loans, and then taking the time to file a FAFSA is a must, where some federal loans are based on information you submit according to your FAFSA. So you could actually get your schooling paid for 100% depending on your financial situation and stuff. It's also access to income-driven repayment plans and other information. Grants and scholarships offered by specific colleges and universities are all determined by filling out your FAFSA. Plus, there are certain scholarships that you're allowed to apply for only if you do fill out the FAFSA. So it's kind of a way to make sure you're able to find any quote unquote free money that's out there and available for you. And yeah, Number one step is to fill it out.
We only have a few seconds left, but I'm wondering, you know, as you look at college, the debt burden and college affordability in Wisconsin, what is to you the number one barrier?
I don't think the number one, well, I guess it's lack of education, a lack of information about it. And it's also kind of making sure you start saving for post-secondary education. You know, the earlier you begin to save for college, the better. But it's actually never too late to start saving either.
Cheryl, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Cheryl Rapp is a college affordability specialist at the State Department of Financial Institutions. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Democratic State Senator Tim Carpenter. Do you think there needs to be changes made to state law on wolf hunting? What questions do you have about how lawmakers confirm the heads of state agencies? 800-642-1234 to join in. There's more State Cap after a news update on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You have aligned to Democratic State Senator Tim Carpenter of Milwaukee. Here's a bit of a roadmap for our discussion. We'll discuss Governor Evers' legislation that would repeal the personal property tax, the wolf hunt bill, making the season optional, and let's start with legislation aimed at speeding up the confirmation process of the governor's political appointees. What questions do you have about how lawmakers confirm the secretaries for state agencies? Should there be a hard and fast deadline for these confirmations? It's 800-642-1234. State Senator Tim Carpenter represents the 3rd District, includes parts of southern and western Milwaukee. Senator Carpenter, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. So the Senate is charged, of course, with confirming the state agency heads. We see on the schedule that tomorrow includes several of the governor's cabinet level appointees getting going before the Senate for full vote. You have a bill aimed at speeding up confirmations. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. To begin with, when Governor Evers won his election, the Republicans had a lame duck session that took the governor's powers and the attorney general's powers away in certain areas. The problem we've been having this session with the Republicans in the majority in the Senate is that Governor Evers, since 2019, more than 150 of his appointments are still waiting Senate confirmation. And of those 104 of them, they've waited longer than 100 days without confirmation. And so, and also several have not received confirmation since January 25th, 2019, 957 days later. What the Republicans are doing is abusing the advice and consent of the Senate. Their leadership is holding up a lot of Governor Evers' appointments. That makes it more difficult, or they're using it as a threat. They already voted to not concur in Senator Brad Path. He was the Secretary of Agriculture, and he said something they didn't like, and so they voted down his confirmation. And I just think it's not good for the institution itself that people that are appointed by the governor, should vote for them up or down. They should go through the confirmation process. And so that's why we tried to introduce a bill to draw attention and try and reform the nomination process for any governor, Democratic or Republican.
What would your legislation do exactly?
Well, what we do is we require the Senate president, he would have to refer a nomination to a committee within 10 days after the appointment is submitted to the Senate. And then the committee must report its recommendations to the Senate within 50 days of referral. The rules are further amended to require the state Senate must consider a nomination within 40 days after the committee has reported its findings and recommendations on the nominations to the Senate. So we set up about a 100-day window exactly. That gives a timetable of some of these appointees should get a public hearing. Many of them have cabinet positions, important positions on boards and commissions. And we're just trying to, as a minority member, draw attention to the abuse of the system that is happening now under the Republicans.
what do you think is going on? Why is there this holdup with confirmations?
I think it's petty politics. It's very frustrating because I've been in the legislature when we had times that we could work across the aisle and get some things done. But it seems like at every point, Speaker Voss or some Republicans, Steve Nass, other people, are really changing the institution of things that were considered to be bipartisan or the norm or collegiality. That's all gone out the window. The attempt, in my opinion, by the Republicans is just to make Governor Evers appear weak and not allow any of his proposals or any of his nominees take office. And so it's very frustrating to have that happen. They keep on talking about the balance of power between the branches and things of that nature, but they certainly aren't treating the confirmation process of the governor very well at all. In fact, they'd be screaming if the shoe was on the other foot.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with State Senator Tim Carpenter of Milwaukee as we look at political appointees legislation he's put forth on making the process more streamlined and providing deadlines in the confirmation process of political appointees. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You mentioned commissions and boards, and there's been certainly a divisiveness around Dr. Fred Prehn, the state's Natural Resources Board, after Prehn refused to step down at the end of his term in May, and the board sets policy for the DNR. What should happen here?
Well, I'm very disappointed. I tried contacting the board member, Dr. Prehn, to talk about him. His appointment, his term had expired on May 1st of this year, and he still has not stepped down from the board. There was another appointee that's serving because the person followed the rules. They were a Walker appointee. That person stepped down. And so another Governor Evers appointee was appointed. But for whatever reason, Dr. Prehn feels that he's, in my opinion, above the law and wants to stay on the commission just to maintain a partisan edge to the Department of Natural Resources. And I don't think that's good. I don't think it's good for the long term. And it's clear that Dr. Prehn is doing this all for political purposes, just to go ahead and deal with issues like the wolf hunt or spearfishing, regulation of PFAS, things of that nature. And unfortunately, the Senate leaders in Madison are basically backing him up. They refuse to allow any appointments to the DNR board. The person that should be on the board is sitting on the sidelines, ready to go in. She's very well qualified, but Dr. Prehn is basically, it's falling on deaf ears. He refuses to leave his expired term.
You're talking about Sandra Nass. I'm wondering, you know, the September board meeting was canceled, first time in a number of years. Are you concerned that the DNR and its board may not be working together over this issue?
Yes, I think we have a usurper still in office, Dr. Prehn. And there was a meeting in Milwaukee where there was discussion of the wolf hunt. And as I mentioned before, I voted on his confirmation. He was voted en masse with a bunch of other appointments. And I went up to him before the meeting and asked him, what are you doing? Why are you not stepping down? And tried talking with him. But the best I could get out of him was that he called the DNR warden and tried to have me removed from the committee meeting. And that's when the whole issue came up about the numbers in a wolf hunt. Mm. And so I think Dr. Prehn says he's a public servant. I don't think he is, because he's not listening to the public, and he's polarizing and politicizing the DNR board, which it shouldn't be. Things should be decided by the scientific method, working with professionals. And it shouldn't be run because of a Republican philosophy of, degrading our resources and not doing what the public wants.
Let's bring in a call now. Shelley in Oregon. Hi, Shelley. What are your thoughts?
Well, my question is that with situations like this where the confirmations are not being put through, is there a way that there could be a referendum or a vote that the people of Wisconsin would decide this issue, since we can't seem to get our politicians to come to an agreement on it?
That's a great question. The problem is the Republicans are so drunk with power that they would refuse to allow any bill to get even a public hearing on, let alone bring to the floor. And so it seems like as every day goes by, there's more and more maneuvers by the Republicans to try and lessen the impact that Democrats would have, or in this case, to make sure that appointments are brought up in a timely fashion. It's not good for the institution. If there's any way that we could do it, we're trying to try lawsuits, things of that nature, but it's very difficult when they're in such solid control of both houses of the legislature.
Shelley, thank you for the call. Let's turn to your wolf hunt bill. State Senator, you have a bill that would change state law on wolf hunting. What would your bill do?
Sure. Well, Wisconsin is the only state in the nation that mandates a wolf hunt. And we all know the gray wolf in Wisconsin was considered an endangered species. That's why you can buy a license plate from the state of Wisconsin with a gray wolf on it and the words endangered species. The Republicans deliberately put in a mandatory hunt of wolves under the Governor Walker administration. Our bill does the very smart and common issue of changing there shall be a wolf hunt, it would mandate a wolf hunt. We just changed the word to may.
So you changed one word in the statute, in the state statute.
Yes, and that goes back and gives the DNR board the authority to use their contacts with the tribes, with the individuals out there in various parts of the state to come up with a decision to see if there should be a wolf hunt. In my personal opinion, it was abhorrent that there was a wolf hunt that was done in February of this year. And mainly that was done because of a out-of-state hunting-based group, Hunter Nation, that sued. And we had this very disorganized, terrible wolf hunt. And if we change the language to saying very simply that the state of Wisconsin shall have a wolf hunt, we say it may and leave it up to the DNR board and their scientists to try and come up with better numbers and better management of the gray wolves in Wisconsin.
Let's spend a moment on the litigation. Six Ojibwe tribes are suing Wisconsin, claiming that these wolf hunts go against their treaty-protected rights. Is Wisconsin overstepping and not fairly sharing resources with tribal nations?
I believe so. I believe when the February hunt that the state of Wisconsin, in bad faith, did not work and try and work with the different tribes. So six tribes in Wisconsin have filed suit. They have the right to go ahead and have certain treaty rights that include the gray wolf. There were treaty rights that were given in 1837 and 1842 that basically allows them to have some control over the natural resources. And they were not in and given any type of, let's say, major input into the previous wolf hunt. And the Republicans are gearing forward only because Dr. Preen is still on the board. If he was not on the board, I don't think there would be a wolf hunt.
We're talking with Democratic State Senator Tim Carpenter of Milwaukee about proposals he's backing, moving on to prescription drug costs and your family. What type of ideas do you have for lawmakers to bring prescription drug costs down? What do you think about Evers' draft legislation for a personal property tax repeal? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute for more State Cap on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You have aligned to Democratic State Senator Tim Carpenter of Milwaukee. The governor and Democrats in the legislature are attempting to eliminate a property tax paid by businesses that Republicans have wanted to do away with for a long time. And under Evers' bill, local governments could recoup lost revenues from money set aside in the state budget. What do you think of such a plan? 800-642-1234. State Senator Tim Carpenter with us for 9 more minutes. I just want to get your take on the personal property tax and eliminating it for businesses. How do you feel about that?
Well, I've opposed it for many years. My main concern is that for my constituents, I hear the personal property or the residential property tax payers are the ones that are the most that are hurting the most. A concern is if we go ahead and the state hasn't increased shared revenue in many years to local units of government, my concern is that the state will go back on its promise to make up the lost revenue by exempting personal property. And so I think it can be done in a way to target, let's say, smaller businesses, try to, and we can't guarantee that that money, that is the local units of government, would be losing by not being able to tax the personal property. That in the future, local government budgets will suffer, and as the Republicans build their budgets, they tend not to direct resources towards Dane, Milwaukee, other parts of the state. And so it's kind of a risky proposition, but I want to remain open to the proposal that Governor Evers forwarded and also Senator Brad Paff.
And your colleague, Republican State Senator Dewey Strobel, who was one of the authors of the original Republican-backed bill on this, says the Democrats' bill includes poison pill provisions, and he says it's not a clean sweep of tax relief. What is your take on that?
Well, my good friend Dewey Strobel would like it if no one, you know, any of the Republican allies paid any taxes whatsoever. I can't believe that there's no area that we could try and develop a compromise with. But with people like Senator Strobel or Speaker Voss, there is no middle ground, and anything that's proposed by us is shot down very quickly. It's not even given a hearing, things of that nature. And you have a tendency for the Republicans to come out with outlandish bills and outlandish statements. And so everything has to be done on their terms. And I don't think it's fair. The governor signed the past budget this past time and fulfilled his commitment to give a 15% tax cut for the middle class. And so the governor can work with the Republicans. It's just the Republicans don't want to work with the governor.
In the interest of finding compromise and middle ground, we heard from Kathy in St. Francis, called in, couldn't stay with us, but wants to ask you how we can work across the aisle with Republicans, Kathy asks, people whose beliefs are so far from center when it comes to masking and vaccinations.
It is the most troubling thing I have seen in my entire career in the state legislature, that Governor Evers and other responsible public health people have tried to do the best they can under this pandemic. But unfortunately, the Republicans don't have a plan to deal with COVID. It's anything that comes forward that, in my opinion, would save people's lives, save them from getting sick. The Republicans say, no, you can't do that, or no. And so they haven't come up with any proposals, but they say no to everything. And I firmly believe on the national level and the state level, because of President Trump and because of the Republican state legislature, people needlessly got sick and people needlessly died just because they want to play politics on a pandemic. And that's really sad with public health. If that can't take number one, the party just won't meet on it. The chair of the Senate Health Committee last year in the midst of the pandemic didn't hold a hearing for 9 months. That's Senator Teston from Stevens Point. And so the Republicans have shown no interest whatsoever about coming up with a public health strategy on how to deal with COVID. And it's very frustrating.
We're talking with State Senator Tim Carpenter of Milwaukee. You co-authored a bill at the beginning of September that would create a review board for prescription drug affordability. The bill has not received a public hearing. How would it ensure prescription drug prices become affordable?
Well, thank you for asking. Governor Evers, I was served on his task force about the rising cost of prescription drugs. I was a caregiver for both my parents. They're both gone now. And I know the big role prescription drugs play in keeping people in their own homes, not in nursing homes, or keeping them healthy so they don't end up in the hospital. And so I believe there are about 12 proposals that came from the governor's task force that have been drafted and introduced. And people overwhelmingly believe that prescription drug prices have been going through the roof. And the frustrating part is the percentages of the cost of prescription drugs are going up at such a higher rate, and people's individual incomes aren't matching that type of increase. So it's causing, again, people to try and decide between paying their bills or getting prescription drugs that they need.
How much latitude and how much authority would a review board have?
Well, I'm sure if we would pass the bill, the Republicans would challenge it in court. They have a tendency to like to spend millions of dollars litigating things. But I think the board should go ahead and have the authority to monitor and certainly get advice out to people and make it more transparent how pharmaceutical companies are passing on price increases. To go ahead and see what's wrong. Why did this cost of a prescription drug go up 900%? And so I think having a review board would be very good in monitoring different prescription drug prices that in many cases are life-saving prescriptions that people need. It's not an option. They need the prescription.
State Senator Tim Carpenter, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and I hope you have a great week.
You too. Tim Carpenter represents the 3rd District, includes parts of southern and western Milwaukee. Just ahead, we discuss how to reduce emissions produced during food production and how farming can help absorb carbon from the atmosphere. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.